Hello, welcome back to another edition of Aster's Economic Week in Review. As always, you have myself, Mac O'Brien, with Aster's Chief Investment Officer, John Eckstein. John, how are you?
I'm great, Mac. How you doing?
I'm doing awesome. So, John, we were going back and forth on the agenda for today's podcast, the data that has been released, but it's been kind of a crazy week, right? With the markets, volatility picking up, you have sell-offs, you have bounce backs. Big picture, what are you seeing?
Yeah, so we should say that we are recording this on Friday, October 30th in the morning. And so we have had a lot of data from a lot of different sources. So I see the big picture again as we have made back about, say, let's say half of the damage that we lost in the shutdown. And the pace of recovery is slowing. That's where we are in a nutshell. And we will jump into the details.
So, John, we usually start with the labor market, but there was a big GDP number that came out this week. So if you don't mind, let's start off with the gross domestic product number this week.
Okay, so GDP came out. What they do usually when they report these numbers is they annualize them, right? They're like, okay, you grew 1% in this quarter. So let's say that would be 4% if you took it out for a year. In the last couple quarters, that's like a dumb thing to do. They're still going to do it on TV, but it doesn't make any sense, right? It's nothing, like nobody thinks that we're going to grow at the same rate as we did in Q3 in Q4. So you just shouldn't even think about that. So we're not even going to mention what the annualized quarterly rates of growth are, because like you shouldn't think that way. How do we want to think about it? Well, one thing you can say is that the economy contracted 2.9% from the third quarter of last year to the third quarter of this year, right? So year on year, economy contracted 2.9%. So that's a 10% decline in Q1 and Q2 and a 7% increase in Q3. The economy was expected to grow about 2% over that period. So we're about 5% short of trend where we should be. What you can think about in this case, we're gonna talk about year over year, down about 3% year on year. When we expected up 2%, we're about 5% below trend.
Okay. And I'm so glad you brought it up in that context, John, because when you, especially for our listeners, because if you just watch TV and you consume the information, they talk about the biggest GDP jump ever, and that's not relevant. An explanation.
It's just not a good way to think about it, right? The best way to think about it is that we're 5% below where we were. We were 10% below where we were. We're up to 5, so that's some progress. But, you know, we're basically at the same sort of trough in terms of where we were below trend as we were at the trough of the Great Recession, right? The 2008 recession.
Well, because I was going to say, I mean, put in context real quick for the listeners. I mean, a lot of verbal fill. So, John, put that in context for the listeners real quick, because you say 5% below trend, and 5% on some data points can be a rounding error. And 5% in other data points like GDP is a big deal, right?
Yeah. So GDP kind of grows, you know, 2% a year right now, like kind of no matter what, right? And so, like I said, this is basically as far of a gap as where we are from where we should have been as we got to at the worst part of the 2008-2009 recession. You know, we're well below trend. And I guess what is worrying people, and it's hard to see this in the quarterly numbers, is that it seems like the pace of recovery is slowing. That's the concern.
Right.
So again, big picture, we are about 5% below where we should be. We had gotten down to about 10% below where we should be, so we're about halfway back. That's consistent with a lot of other things we've been saying for the last few months. But, you know, I'm going to say also that if you polled professional economists in May and asked them where they thought the economy was be at the end of the year, they thought it was going to be much worse than it is now. So, you know, in some ways, you know, we are doing better than our first sort of draft made it seem we were going to.
Right.
There's
still a lot of time left in the year, right? I mean, we have
There's a lot of stuff that's baked in the cake already, right?
Like a lot of stuff baked in the cake, right? And
how many more jobs are we going to add, like in the best case scenario?
Right.
Speaking of which,
labor market.
Yeah. The big data this week, of course, was the jobless claims. What we see there is claims continuing, new claims for unemployment insurance continuing at elevated levels. They're getting a little bit better, right? this month, the actual was 750,000 claims for on the state program, plus another 300 something on the pandemic unemployment assistance. The level of continuing claims continues to drop. Though people are transferring from the regular state program into an emergency extension program, but that program is going to be running out. That gives people an extra 13 weeks, and
right.
that's coming up.
We get new listeners every week, so we've talked about this in the past. To put it into context again, from where the worst period, I mean, when we're still at 700 plus initial jobless claims, people filing for unemployment for the first time over the, you know,
yep.
the past week.
You know, and I guess like, so the claims is a number we really like because it's very timely and it's usually not subject to huge revisions. But I got to say, like, it sure doesn't feel like a million people a week are still losing their jobs, right? Like, it just doesn't feel that way. I mean, we have talked about the increased churn, like people getting jobs and losing jobs, and I think that's true. But, you know, it just doesn't feel like there's still a million people a week losing jobs. And so I think it might be time to downweight claims number a little bit until we get a better handle of what's going on. Right.
Yeah.
This isn't any sort of formal thing, but just it's just there's some things which kind of don't add up. We're going to continue to keep an eye on it. Continuing claims are dropping, but we know there's a lot of fraud in that and double counting in that. And so I'm going to say that the best we can say about the claims number this week is that it's not improving at a rapid pace, and it seems to be about the same as it was last week. And so that's, I'm interpreting that as, you know, the labor market is fairly stable. If you look at alternate indicators, you do see some indicators that job hunting searches are dropping and going below forecasts. So we'll see if that plays out in the future. Couple
John,
other.
I don't see it on my stat sheet, but is the U6, the underemployment number, pretty stable as well?
So the underemployment number only comes out with the unemployment with the
next Friday
with the labor situation report, the employment situation report, which comes out Friday. And we'll have a very special episode of the podcast with Rob and I talking about what's going on.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one because, you know, the northern states have started to close down again. You know, the past week of data won't be in next Friday's report, but, you know, we're starting to see another wave of shutdowns and
yeah,
all that fun
I think,
stuff.
I think, again, like, people are not waiting for the government to tell them what to do, right? Like, I'm going to ask you, like, a marketing guy at a mutual fund company, like, what was Illinois' cases yesterday? Like, you know, right? You're watching it. Everybody's watching it. Your wife knows. Like, my 17-year-old knows, like, what the cases are. So, like, people are making decisions on their own. People are like, oh, you know what? I don't know about trick or treating this year, or I don't know about doing. You know, we were going to have play dates, but now we're going to stop. You know, so people are making their decisions already, and it's not going to be a real discontinuous thing. I'm not saying the effect isn't there. I'm saying it's not going to be discontinuous like it was in April.
Well, I'm saying that people are losing their jobs because the restaurants are being shut down to indoor dining, right? Because
people are shut down. Again, like, I think that's going to be a more continuous process, not a discontinuous one, right? Like, I think that's already in there, right? I think people will be pulling back before, but I mean, we'll see.
Yeah.
But you're right, like, for next week in particular, the reference week, the week they did the survey was 2 weeks ago now, so the second
week right.
in October. Like, one or two more things in the labor market before we move on. There's an anecdotal Fed report where they sort of talk about what they're hearing, and one thing they were hearing is that supply constraints from the virus anxiety and school closures are making it feel like full employment for some firms, even though we're very far from full employment.
What do you mean by that?
So what I mean is that if you think about like what the employment population ratio is today, which is about 74, right? Prime age employment, 74% of people your age have a job. And so that's usually consistent with year over year wage and salary growth of about 1%, but we're actually getting like 2.5 or 3%. So why is that? And that's because of supply constraints, right? It's almost as if we're at full employment. People can't find someone to hire, so they have to bid up their wages to induce someone to come in. Why is that, right? It's not because we're out of people, right? We got plenty of people, but people either don't want to work because of COVID, or, you know, there's probably, I saw an estimate today, there's probably, you know, 1.2 million people, mainly women, who are dropping out of the workforce because of taking care of their kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And that's definitely prime age, right? And that's disproportionately hitting women, right? And this whole, I mean, sometime we're gonna have to talk about like the effects of this virus on the distribution of wealth and inequality in America too. Like, it's hitting people with less wealth and less power much more than it's hitting people with more.
Yeah, a huge concern, right? It's the intangible effects the virus is having on everybody, right? Elderly all the way down to the youth, to the wage gap, to the inequality gap, et cetera. Somewhat segueing from labor market, but do you want to touch upon personal income? Because pulling out of a recession is really usually on the back of people spending money, right? Versus saving money. What do you see on personal income, personal saving rates, et cetera?
So the personal income numbers are still high, right? And a large part that is because of the amount of transfers that we're making. Those are very high, like the amount of money people are getting from the government. Their income from working is low, but their overall income after transfers is high. So, and how are they spending that? They're saving more than they usually do, but saving less aggressively than they were a few months ago, right? So the income numbers are coming back to trend, and the savings numbers are more slowly coming back to trend.
Yeah.
And there's probably, again, you know, a substantial war chest built up of savings, and people don't know if they're going to have to draw that down because they're going to lose their job, or people are just, they can't take a cruise this year, so they're saving that money and they're going to take two cruises next year or something like that. So
we've talked about— How many cruises are you taking next year, John?
I'm taking zero cruises next year. I think zero cruises next year. I mean, I don't know if I'm coming to Chicago next year, honestly. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Well, I thought you, on a previous podcast, I think you weren't a big cruise fan.
I do not see the attraction of cruises. Like, that leaves more room for everyone who does love them, and I'm really happy for them, but it ain't for me.
So PMIs, John.
PMIs, yeah. Purchasing managers' indices, where basically the model is not so much really counting, you know, how many cookies a factory made, but asking factory owners, like, are things better or worse than they were last month? So it's a little bit more qualitative, but it is more timely. Those continue to be fairly strong. We've got preliminary numbers for October already, and the services sector is quite strong, the manufacturing sector a little bit less so. We will get final numbers and a whole different series of numbers next week, but those are still showing expansion of activity at fairly healthy rates.
Durable goods was pretty strong this past week, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you would think some of that at least is due to the house buying that we've seen.
Right? House buying in autos, right?
House buying in autos, exactly. But even ex-transportation, it's quite strong.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the non-defense capital goods, so the things that, you know, so buying machine parts for your factory, those are strong, a little bit weaker than expected, but still pretty strong year on year. Though, you know, for the capital goods, like, you have to wonder, as the economy becomes more virtual, how important is that going to be this year, right? You can easily imagine a recovery this year that did not involve a lot of capital goods spending.
Right.
So that's something to keep an eye on. Things are always changing.
And then if I'm looking, was there a slight dip in home sales? I mean, home sales have been such a strong area.
That's a good point. So in the home sales situation, what we usually see is a decline in home sales that starts in the late summer, right? So people buy houses in late spring, early summer, and it peaks in June and then declines in July, and it's a lot lower as things get colder. This year, that pattern has been pushed back a few months. We have a much sharper peak in June, and July, August, September are much higher than you would usually think, but they're still, September is still lower than June.
All right, John, well, that's it for our agenda and our data points. We have a big week next week. You and Rob will talk about the jobs report, I doubt we'll have clarity on the election. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe and give us a rating. John, have a great weekend.
Thanks, Mac. Have a good weekend.
To learn more about Aster Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.asterim.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Aster Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.